Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 17th of October 2015. Welcome to the show, folks. My name's Herriwood Fenton, and today I'm going to be focusing in the first part of the show on the TPP, specifically the recently leaked copyright information which was released to the internet by WikiLeaks. I grabbed a copy of the PDF file that contains that leaked segment, and I've been reading through it, and I've also read several different commentaries on it from different websites. Now, what I want to focus on in my discussion is the general tone and tenor of the document itself. It is so punitive. It is so heavily laden with penalties, both civil and criminal, that it is really quite shocking to realize, when you actually look at a document like this and you realize that when countries sign up to it, they are obligating the creation of legislation that has all these criminal penalties built into it. And, you know, it's so brutal. It is such a sledgehammer approach when the document is described as a free trade agreement, free trade. It sounds wonderful in principle that trade is being opened up and allowing countries to exchange goods and services more freely. But then when you look at the document, you find it's just full of penalties and prohibitions and the enforcement of criminal penalties in so many different situations that it doesn't really seem that free anymore. And you realize, gee, you know, this is there are levels of deception going on here. You really have to ignore, you have to throw out everything that the politicians and that the spruikers for these free trade agreements say, and you've got to look at the facts of what they're doing. And when you get down to the facts, what you find out is actually this is about power and control. And of course, in a situation where the alliances such as BRICS are gaining economic traction, and in a situation as we have now where America's prestige is a little bit tarnished in relation to its activities in the Middle East and its failure to deal with a very serious situation in Iraq and Syria, the pressure is upon the US to kind of pull together its own sphere, and this is an example of that on an economic level. The Trans-Pacific Partnership basically represents a whole lot of countries which border on the Pacific, and of course, you know, notably excludes China, but it does include Vietnam, which is an interesting fact, given that Vietnam has absolutely no control over copyright. I mean, Vietnam is a pirate's wonderland. You can buy anything there. It's actually mind-boggling to me how Vietnam could be signing up to this agreement, which is going to force it to bring in all of these penalties, all of these criminal penalties. I just can't see it happening. I mean, I see a real problem there, and actually there's some commentary on that which has been put forward that because none of this is binding right away, the governments that are actually agreeing to it are not necessarily going to take responsibility for the implementation. In the case of Vietnam, it really will take a major draconian change in practice for Vietnam to begin to apply copyright infringement law as is defined in the TPP. But let's actually get into talking a little about the agreements and the leaked information which came out via WikiLeaks. I've got a couple of articles here, one from news.com.au, and look, take this kind of stuff with a grain of salt. A lot of these people, these journos, don't do a lot of due diligence when they write these articles. But it's interesting to note that the article posted on news.com.au certainly has the scare factor up, ratcheted up to the highest level. So this is from News, October 15. And the headlines, or one of the versions of the headlines, is "Piracy Crackdown Goes Global." If you have ever downloaded, or more importantly, uploaded movies, TV shows and music, be scared. Be very scared. According to a leaked version of the highly secretive Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, rights holders such as Hollywood studios could soon be able to sue you for lots of money. WikiLeaks posted a leaked version which said that the agreement would not only force internet service providers to hand over the details of illegal downloaders to the big studios, but they will also be required to keep track of persistent pirates and dob them in. More alarmingly, the leaked TPP document says that it wants all the countries signed up to basically change their laws to make it easier for the studios to take copyright infringers to court and seek undisclosed damage. Now, another article here from Forbes. It says here, the US has all along wished to introduce features of the controversial Digital Millennium Copyright Act, such as compelling ISPs to alert customers who are accused of illegal downloads and possibly take the infringing material down. If they fail to do so, they would themselves be liable for any copyright infringement by their customers. But the latest draft goes even further. The US wants to see these rules covering not just ISPs, but anyone providing internet services. And as Alberto Cerda of Georgetown University Law Center points out to Torrent Freak, this means that coffee shops could potentially be held liable for copyright infringement by their customers. And there is indeed an article here on torrentfreak.com. And I'll just read to you a little from that. So Alberto Cerda of Georgetown University says, "The most worrying proposal on the matter is the one that would extend the scope of provisions from companies that provide internet services to any person who provides internet online services." The leaked draft also adds a provision that would allow ISPs to spy on their own users to catch those who download infringing content. This is another concern, according to the law professor. Now, I've actually got a copy of the document up here, and I've read through it. It is hard for me to actually confirm the specific claims that are made in these articles. I can point out one paragraph here that appears to be relevant to that. Under Internet Service Providers, on page 51 of the document, it says that there will be a framework of legal remedies to deal with a copyright infringement, which shall include A, legal incentives for internet service providers to cooperate with copyright owners to deter the unauthorized storage and transmission of copyrighted materials, or in the alternative, to take other action to deter the unauthorized storage and transmission of copyrighted materials. And limitations in its law that have the effect of precluding monetary relief against internet service providers that they do not control, initiate, or direct. Okay, those two paragraphs are a little bit ambiguous. The first one, paragraph A, is, to me, seems the key one, providing legal incentives for internet service providers to cooperate with copyright owners to deter the unauthorized storage and transmission of copyrighted materials. I find it difficult to actually locate anything in here that corresponds exactly to what the commentator in the previous article I read to you had said, including the article on Forbes and including the article on News. But the document is here and everyone can download it from WikiLeaks and you can make up your own mind. I want to talk a little about the broader concept here, because this is far more important. And bear in mind, Australia is bringing in infringement notices. There is no doubt about it. Australia is bringing them in. Whether or not they have to or not, Australia is doing it. Now, the infringement notices have been in place before. And I think it's just going to be now more systematized and it's going to be a requirement. It's going to be a legal requirement that every ISP does it, whereas before I think it was optional. I mean, there were some ISPs doing it, some weren't. Now, so these infringement notices basically will be an escalating series of notices which could end up in legal action being taken against a person associated with an IP address. And these can lead to criminal penalties as well. Although it seems from what I've read, most of the criminal penalties do seem to be in relation to commercial exploitation. But there is some level of ambiguity in the way that's defined. Now, the real point here, the real focus, where we need to concentrate our attention, is understanding that we've been misled, that there has been kind of a deception foisted upon us on the nature of what copyright really is. And there has been sort of a brainwashing of the general population to believe that unauthorized downloads is kind of like theft. Whereas in fact it is nothing like theft. I'll be getting back to that in a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And I want to emphasize in today's show about copyright the simple fact that copyright law and penalties for copyright infringement are not about protecting anyone other than very powerful organizations. That's what it's about protecting, as if they needed protecting. You know what I mean? It's like the super rich have to be protected. But that actually tells you a lot, because that really is what's going on here. They need their wealth and status and prestige protected. But they sell it to you as it's about the little guy. It's about the person who wrote a song. You know, it's about the person who wrote a book. It's about the person who made a documentary. And boy, you know, we shouldn't steal from these people because they work really hard, you know, and we're going to protect those people. It's baby talk, right, to make you believe that these laws are really about something good. Copyright, which derives from the earliest days of the printing press during the Renaissance, copyright began with the powers that be, the gang lords of those times who called themselves kings, preventing people from using printing presses to publish material which was going to be threatening to them. In other words, it was from the beginning always about protecting power, right? Because mass production of information is a threat to those in power, because by communicating en masse, people know more, they can't be hoodwinked, right? That's why they introduced copyright, which was a royal prerogative, which basically said that only certain printing presses were allowed to print. And if they started printing stuff that the king, aka gang leader, didn't like, they would be shut down or burned down. So copyright was always about protecting those in power. And in those times, printing presses were being used to put out material. It wasn't just the Bible, you know, it was leaflets, pamphlets, questioning the government, making people think, bringing people up to a level, right? Now, of course, in our current era, we've lost that understanding of what copyright is about, and of course it is used to protect the materials which are the sources of a great amount of income for extremely wealthy entities. And of course, once again, they want to protect their wealth by preventing the copying of that information. And, you know, for many years, they have been trying to use the propaganda meme that copying, including like copying a VHS cassette tape, is actually theft. It's stealing. It's like shoplifting. You know, back in the 90s, on the VHS cassettes, they used to have these little scary videos that would basically say that if you copy a VHS tape, it's the same as shoplifting in a supermarket, right? Well, of course, there's nothing like it. There's no comparison at all. I mean, when you copy material, you're not depriving anyone of that material. There's no theft. There's no asportation taking place. And therefore, the concepts in common law that relate to property simply don't apply. And, of course, they know that. And that's why they have to draft these incredibly complex, bloated, turgid documents to try and put into law some statutes that criminalize certain behavior. Because there is no common law way of interpreting it. That I've noticed they've actually tended to drop the word theft now. It was used a lot back in the 90s, but it's used less and less in this age, but the word infringement is now sort of burned into our psyche with enough fear associated with it that the concept of infringement now is something that we should all be very afraid of. You know, you might infringe copyright. Oh my God! You know, oh, I could go to prison for that. And what is infringing copyright? Well, it's basically reproducing a work in any form. So a work, a performance, a movie, a song, if you reproduce it in any form for the public, you know, or even just for yourself if you haven't paid for that copyright, if you haven't paid for the license, it is actually an infringement of copyright. So if you sit down with your guitar and play a few songs that are on the Sony, that are owned by Sony, right? Sony could sue you for playing a few songs on your back porch on your guitar. And this is a literal fact. I'm not joking. That is the way it works. And if you were to play a concert, you should invite your friends around and say, you know, $5 each, we're having a barbecue. That could actually be criminal. If you were to sit there and play a song for, say, 20 people and take some money for it, that would be criminal. You could go to prison. Buskers could all be put in prison. All buskers in countries that are signatories to the TPP should be thrown into prison immediately. Now, you've got to understand the principle, because by not understanding the principle, you don't understand the application. Of course, in most cases, they won't be fining buskers. You know, they won't be fining you for having a sing-along in your backyard. But they could. And this is the problem. You allow frameworks of law to be introduced which criminalize completely harmless behavior. This is what you're doing in allowing these so-called free trade agreements, which then force laws to be rewritten. And, you know, I'd really like to get through to a lot of the nice, normal, average people out there who don't sort of get this and think this is all ridiculous. Because I know what they're thinking. If they were listening to me now, they'd say, oh, you're exaggerating. You know, this won't happen. They're only just trying to catch this. They're only just trying to do that. And this is where this voluntary servitude, this willingness to basically accept the yoke of a totally unjust system because you think that they won't apply it against you to the level that they could, technically. It's like saying with all of the draconian measures that were taken against terrorism, that it's all fine because, you know, they won't come after me. I'm a white guy and I've got a good job. You know, I'm not a terrorist. Therefore, you know, they won't use all of this apparatus against me. They're not interested in my personal information. They won't come and summarily arrest me because, look, you know, I am a law-abiding citizen. You know, it's the most pathetic excuse that's ever been used for going along with tyranny. And I just wish I could really get through to those people who are unfortunately the majority in Australian society to understand that that's not good enough. But it may well take much harsher times ahead before people do begin to understand the importance of this. We're going to break. I'll be coming back with some other stories when we get back. Stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I just want to talk a little now about the MH17 report and its aftermath, particularly as it's been reported in the Australian press. Our Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, who has only been in the office for a few weeks, has now joined the chorus of other leaders who are very quick to denounce Russia and make quite harsh statements without really any concern for the diplomatic repercussions that that might have. An article here from news.com.au. Malcolm Turnbull vows to bring justice to those responsible for the MH17 crash. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has condemned the Kremlin in a fiery performance in Parliament, saying, "We will not be bullied by Russia." Responding to the release of the Dutch Air Safety Board's report into the downing of MH17, Mr. Turnbull slammed Russia for using its veto power at the United Nations Security Council in July to avoid the creation of a special international criminal tribunal designed to bring those responsible to justice. "We are focused on all possible options for prosecuting those responsible," he told Parliament. Now, of course, the Russians did veto the tribunal, the criminal tribunal. However, they did put forward their own proposal for a joint investigation, and they have offered to assist with the investigation, but most of what they've offered has been rejected. And it should be noted that the Ukraine supported that motion for the tribunal. There were only a few countries that actually supported it, one of them being Malaysia, one of them being Australia. The Russians decided to veto it, and of course that created a lot of bad publicity for Russia. But they did so in an environment where Russia is continually being demonized. And no doubt Vladimir Putin knew that this would be somewhat of a kangaroo court, that the Russians would have very little influence over it, and he simply used his power and authority to veto it. Putin has taken a very, very assertive stand in international politics over the past few months, and you know, we yet to see what the full outcome of that is. But the Russians, by and large, are taking the front foot in terms of their assertions that they are on the level and that they are working towards good outcomes and that they are following due process. And there's an excellent interview, which is in Russian but with English subtitles, which I'll post on the show notes, where you can see Putin talking about all these subjects. And, you know, when you just listen to the man and you listen to what he says, his clear presentation, his unambiguous statements, there's a lack of so much of the fluff and hyperbole that we see with other leaders. I just tend to think that this guy is actually pretty much on the level. Like, he says what he means and he means what he says. And the question about the culpability of MH17 is, of course, very important. It's a horrendous crime that was committed. But there's, of course, absolutely no motive and no benefit for the Russians to have been in any way involved in this. Nor is there any motive or benefit for the pro-Russian rebels in the Ukraine to be involved with this. It may be that they did shoot it down by accident, thinking that it was a Ukrainian tanker plane. That, of course, is a plausible theory. However, the attempts to demonize this as if it were intentional are clearly part of a calibrated plan to demonize Russia. I mean, it's just part of an overarching propaganda theme of the West. But of course, when you think about who would really benefit, the Ukrainians would have benefited from this massively, simply by being able to point the finger at Russia. And they can do so because the Western media is allied with them. You know, if the Western media were not allied with them, of course, it would be very dangerous and stupid for them to have done that, because they could easily be caught out. But knowing, as we do, this pattern of false flags, this pattern in history where the most violent, evil, heinous attacks are done to pin it on someone else that's part of some conflict that's ongoing, it's been done so many times that we really shouldn't rule it out. I have no idea. But so much that we know about the Ukrainian government indicates that they are the type of people who would be capable of doing such a thing. Now, I'll just read to you here briefly from Paul Craig Roberts, who wrote a short piece on this a few days ago. Paul Craig Roberts, of course, a US commentator, writer, former advisor to Ronald Reagan, and has been on Truth News Radio. If you look into our archives, you'll see I did an interview with Paul Craig Roberts last year. When I read that the report on the downing of the Malaysian airliner over Ukraine was being put in the hands of the Dutch, I knew there would be no investigation and no attention to the facts, and there wasn't. I did not intend to write about the report because Washington's propaganda has already succeeded, at least in the Western world, in its purpose of laying the blame on Russia. However, the misrepresentation of the Dutch report by Western media, such as NPR, is so outrageous as to make the media the story and not the report. For example, I just heard NPR's Moscow correspondent Corey Flintoff say that the missile that hit the airliner was fired by Ukrainian separatists who lack the technical ability to operate the system. Therefore, the missile had to have been fired by a Russian. There is nothing in the Dutch report whatsoever that leads to this conclusion. Flintoff either is incompetent or lying, or he is expressing his view and not the report's conclusion. The only conclusion that the report reaches is one that we already knew. If a Buk missile brought down the airliner, it was a Russian-made missile. The Dutch report does not say who fired it. Indeed, the report places no blame on Russia, but it does place blame on Ukraine for not closing the airspace over the war area. Attorneys have stated in response to the report that families of those killed and the Malaysian airline itself are likely to file lawsuits against Ukraine for negligence. What Washington has never explained and the Western media has never asked is what motives did separatists and Russia have to shoot down a Malaysian airliner? The answer is none whatsoever. The Russian government would never allow such a thing. Putin would have immediately strung up those responsible. Washington's story makes no sense whatsoever. Only an idiot could believe it. What motive did Washington have? Many. The demonization of Russia made it impossible for European governments to resist or abandon the economic sanctions that Washington is using to break economic and political relationships between Europe and Russia. The Russian manufacturer of the Buk missile has proven that if a Buk missile was used, it was an old version that exists only in the Ukraine military. Now, of course, the refusal of the Ukrainians to close the airspace is a very important point, which was highlighted by the Dutch investigation. And the most harsh criticisms really are against the Ukraine. We're going to break. I've got one more important story to bring to you today, so stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back in just a moment.
In terms of creating wars, is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I want to turn now to a completely different topic. It's about the death of a 17-year-old boy in Michigan in the United States. He was gunned down by a policeman. Of course, this is one of thousands of stories. We've all heard so many, and they tend to be somewhat of a blur, and it's hard to even remember each one. This particular one is particularly heartrending, and I just wanted to focus on it, and I've got a really excellent video presentation that I want to play to you that summarizes why it's so important and what the glaring problems are with it. But it's important to understand this not just for the single case, for the single issue of injustice, but what it implies, what it symbolizes for what American society has come to. And of course, many of the problems there apply in other countries too, including Australia. But just to give you a very brief summary of what happened, this kid was driving on his way home from church, saw a car approaching with what appeared to be high beams on, so he quickly flashed the approaching car to indicate that that driver's high beams were on. It turned out that the approaching car was actually a police car. And what then ensued was a kind of a standoff where the policeman pulled him over and demanded to see his license and registration and insurance papers, and he did not comply. And the policeman became more and more irate, and in the end just kind of flew into a rage and pulled Devin out of the car, which resulted in a bit of an altercation. And then 10 seconds after that, there was a taser gun was fired, and then 10 seconds after that, 7 bullets were fired and Devin Guilford was killed. The policeman was completely exonerated of any guilt, but the family is now suing in a civil liability suit. And of course, there's a lot of attention on this. And the fact is, the kid was a good kid. He'd never had any problems before. He'd never had any convictions for anything. He'd never had any problems at school. He really was a perfectly good, honest, decent kid from a conservative family who themselves have never said anything against the police. And it's been a real shock to them to have this happen. I'm going to actually play to you now the presentation. I probably won't get through it before the end of the show, but it's really excellent, and it gives you a good overview of what the key legal questions are and why it's so important that we take this very seriously and consider the deeper implications of the whole event.
Down on the ground now.
What do you mean?
Get on your belly right now.
My name is Matthew Cook, and this is an in-depth look at the horrific shooting of Devin Guilford by Sergeant Frost of the Michigan Eaton County Sheriff's Department. The erosion of our Fourth Amendment rights to be free of unlawful searches and seizures, combined with a society that today has more prisons than universities, puts both law enforcement and citizens in jeopardy. Author-journalist Radley Balco writes that the founders of the Constitution would not have recognized modern policing. Law enforcement of the 18th century was mostly a private affair. Sheriffs oversaw jails, but jails were used to hold defendants before trial. Incarceration as punishment was incredibly rare. Today we have the largest prison population on the planet. When the founders wrote that Constitution, it was a totally different world. And you can learn about the history from Radley Balco's brilliant page-turner, Rise of the Warrior Cop. And if you download it for free as an audiobook, you'll be helping support this series. But the result of that history can be tragically seen here in this in-depth look at February 28th, 2015, a story strikingly familiar, and again, one where our modern justice system appears to be anything but just.
No charges for an Eaton County sergeant after a traffic stop.
A 17-year-old boy named Devin Guilford employs a universally known trucker signal, flashing his brights at a cop driving by to let the officer know his high beams are on. Instead of waving a hand and thanking the Good Samaritan, 8-year veteran Sergeant Frost invokes vehicle code 257.700 regarding the intensity of road lighting equipment, which states, "An oncoming vehicle within 500 feet shall use a distribution of light so aimed that the glaring rays are not projected into the eyes of the oncoming driver." In criminal law, the illegal act of entrapment is when a law enforcement agent induces a person to commit a criminal offense they would not have committed otherwise. But maybe Frost's brights aren't on, or he doesn't know they're on. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and assume he doesn't know why Devin flashed him.
Hey, driver's license, registration, proof of insurance, please. Pulled you over because you flashed me. I didn't even have my brights on.
He just said, "I didn't have my brights on." So he knows full well why Devin's flashed him, and he knows there's no criminal intent here. Road safety being his primary job, he should probably inspect his lights. But Frost doesn't want to do that. Instead, he's argumentative and combative.
I'm telling you, because when I turned around,
I did not see.
I didn't have them on, all right?
Dude, trust me. I know.
Trust me, okay? I did not have them on. When I turned around, I flashed them on to show you that they weren't on.
Well, you turned them off when you came around.
No, I didn't. Driver's license, registration. Driver's license, registration, proof.
Okay, well, it seems like they're both being pretty stubborn here, but let's take a step back. Big picture. The officer's job is to protect and serve the citizens of his community. Well, here's a citizen who's been blinded by the officer's headlights, which is illegal in Michigan, as we've established, and in response, the officers pulled him over. Devin's been pretty respectful about it. He called the sergeant sir, and he's continuing to alert him to this safety issue. And the officer's response is basically calling him a liar and demanding to see his papers.
Driver's license, registration, proof of insurance, please.
I don't even know you're an officer. Three phones on my bank.
Driver's license, registration, proof of insurance, please. You've been pulled over. My name is Sergeant Frost. My name is Sergeant Frost of the Eaton County Sheriff's Office.
That's your badge number?
You cannot see my badge number.
So now it appears we have a standoff, and Devin wants to see the sergeant's papers. Frost is irritated and won't provide his badge number. Those who believe citizens are subordinates or on a lower status than a police officer would be irritated with Devin as well at this point. But the fact is, they are both citizens, and it is a legal right in Michigan to ask for a name and badge number. There are terrible stories of people impersonating police officers. But whether or not Devin has real doubts, we are a society that normally praises our kids for standing up to bullies, and the sergeant is being one. In a country that prides itself on our freedoms and constitution, the job of the law officer should really be one of encouraging people to exercise their rights as part of the job description, perhaps the most important part. We're at a time when public confidence in police is at a 22-year low, so that kind of respect would certainly win the support of a lot of people, this teenager included. I mean, the officer hasn't even asked what his name is, only demanded to see his papers. Ironically, right now it's almost as if he's looking in the mirror.
I am video and audio recording for my safety and your safety.
That is absolutely fine, so am I.
Sergeant Frost has called for backup. He's clearly upset at anyone questioning him and preparing to escalate this further.
You just told me that I could not have your badge number. That's against the law, sir.
No, you asked me to show it to me.
His badge number is not actually printed on his badge, and since Devin asked him to show his badge number, Frost is using that as the excuse not to give it to him.
You asked me to show it to me.
Yes, and you said no. You told me no. Is that correct? It is correct, sir.
You have two choices.
Am I being detained?
I'm giving you the option.
Am I being detained?
Michigan State Police investigators, who later interviewed Devin's father and girlfriend, both said he'd recently watched some YouTube videos of police encounters with citizens. And while he hadn't expressed any anti-police views, he was interested in citizens' rights. So now Devin's got his phone out because he understandably feels his rights are being violated. But some of this advice he's seen or read is technically incorrect, at least for Michigan. According to Radley Balco's very objective article about this case in the Washington Post, most places do require a driver to provide a license and registration when pulled over, no matter what, even if the police officer lacks cause for the underlying stop. Now, this is a very controversial issue, which some challenge on a constant basis, particularly at checkpoints.
What's up, ma'am?
What's up?
All right. Can we have you pull into secondary, please?
No, thank you. I'd like to go free on my way. And correct me if I'm wrong. Did I stumble into Mexico, or is it still United States? Okay, well then therefore I should have the freedom to travel unmolested because I'm in America here. So,
well, go ahead, Cliff.
Go ahead and go where?
Keep going on the road.
Okay, see you later.
Demanding to see one's papers without a genuinely substantive cause may technically be legal due to a long-standing erosion of the Fourth Amendment. When it comes down to it, this is not a constitutional stop.
Am I being detained?
Yes, you are.
For what crime?
You flashed me with your high beams.
You had your lights on, sir.
The Fourth Amendment is clearly written. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. Well, if there was ever a case of an unreasonable search and seizure of someone's papers, this is the perfect example. To dive a little deeper, this sort of abuse of power is the very reason the founders wrote the Fourth Amendment in the first place, to protect themselves against sweeping laws used by the crown to generate revenue from the colonists. This freedom to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures was a major reason they waged a war for independence. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor was quoted in a good Fourth Amendment violation case last April that we can't keep bending the Fourth Amendment to the resources of law enforcement, or the Fourth Amendment becomes a useless piece of paper. Devin has in no way posed a threat to public safety, so pulling him over for briefly violating the same code Sergeant Frost has been violating continuously demonstrates that freedom our founders made such a heavy sacrifice for has, at least in this case, indeed become a useless piece of paper. We have our failed war on drugs largely to blame for that.
This is for us.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. We are at the end of the show today. The presentation here is quite long, and it goes into a lot more detail into every aspect and every step of the way of what happened to this young man. And it really raises some very, very important questions. So I'll put the link up there. It's actually on Facebook. It's a Facebook video, but I hope you'll find it worthwhile. It's been great talking to you today. I will be back again next week. Truth News Radio Australia, signing off.